the OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Right, a very good morning to you. Welcome along to OTB AM, broadcasting live on OTB Sports Radio. You can get that 24 hours a day on your smart speaker. You just tell Alexa or Google to play OTB Sports Radio and tune in. And away you go. I'm Gerry Gilroy. Owen Sheehan's here too.
Very good morning.
Owen was just telling me blow by blow how many times he was coughing yesterday.
We got to that stage. Full-blown paranoia. Actually, took some medicine before I went to sleep last night.
The medicine's not going to do any good to you.
So I've heard, but in case it's an actual cough or something.
Yeah, but like, if you've got the coronavirus, like, popping two Benadryl flu won't help you.
No, it won't, but I don't know what I've got. I probably don't have anything.
On the back there, we've got Edna O'Mahony, who's on the show, and Kylian Mbappe, who's not on the show, unfortunately, for you today, but Kylian Mbappe has a cold.
No, he's got a sore throat.
I know, it's a Frank Sinatra has a cold,
oh, reference,
but don't worry.
One day.
Yeah, look, he has a sore throat, and so the whole world might stop. So we're going to go to France to find out about Kylian Mbappe's sore throat.
Yeah,
that's where we're at now. It's going to be like minute by minute account of which basketballer, which footballer, which rugby player has something approximating the coronavirus, and then we'll be able to talk about that for 25 minutes every day.
Has he not discovered Strepsils, I wonder? Would absolutely sort him out.
Would they perhaps have something in them that might make him test positive or something? I don't know.
I don't know, actually. I don't remember ever feeling, oh my God, I feel amazing after taking a Strepsil.
Was there not like I was a little, ooh,
off Strepsils.
I've got a second one of these. Yeah, really? When you're like nine. Might just have been the sugar now.
I'd say it was probably just the sugar and a very low tolerance for sugar. You must have had a very healthy diet as a child.
A sensitive palate, I believe.
Is a sore throat a symptom?
Yeah.
Is it?
Oh yeah.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah, respiratory. Like sore throat.
Is sore throat respiratory?
It turns into
difficulty breathing, coughing, like I had, like the coronavirus I had yesterday.
So you, but not Mbappe, are the one that we should be worried about.
100%. We should be going to...
You're sweating a bit under the lights there. Is this like...
We should be going to Kerry right now to get some information on me.
We should get your mum on the phone to ask about how you dealt with your swine flu the first time. And as somebody who had swine flu, as one of the few people in the country who actually got the swine flu, mm-hmm. We know you are susceptible to whatever trendy, voguish virus is doing the rounds. A weakened immunocompromised, I believe mm-hmm. they call you. And yeah, so you're like a prime target to be patient at A, except in this case it would be, what are we at now, 33. So the alphabet rolls back round and we're like...
JJ or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
AJ. I would love to be that patient because you get so much attention if you've got the illness. It's fantastic. So hopefully, I get to be that guy again. Because actually, I got no attention actually when I got the swine flu. My entire family went off to watch the homecoming for Kerry, and I was just left at home on my own.
Just won the All Ireland. What do you expect?
No, I should be cared for.
I'm sure they brought you back an autograph.
I'm sure they did.
Squiggle something on that piece of paper there and tell them it's Jack O'Shea.
Yeah, so I don't know. I would, in all seriousness, I hope I don't get Kylian Mbappe sore throat because it sounds like a bad old dose that he's got.
We will be heading over to France to find out about Kylian Mbappe's sore throat because the PSG Dortmund game is going to be played behind closed doors. Lots of sport is going by the wayside, but not the Cheltenham Festival and nothing in England at the moment, which, let's face it, is good for us who have lots of sport shows to fill and sport to talk about because in a couple of weeks, we could all be sitting at home all day watching nothing but whatever sport they decide to put on behind closed doors, which... You know, I think there's probably going to be a role to be played by the sports authorities putting on sport for everybody who's trapped in their houses. I think the Italians have got, like, obviously very late to have decided to shut everything down. What's everybody going to do when they're at home?
Watch Netflix.
Fall out, have rows.
This is the time when Netflix need to be dropping everything. As in, like, launch everything right now because your figures will be through the roof.
Ozark season 3.
Everything. Everything that's sitting on ice, just put it out right now.
Fair point.
I'm free for hire Netflix, by the way.
I do believe that putting matches on, like, would be an important distraction for everybody.
What? Like what? Like what about the players?
Serie A.
Serie A?
Put Serie A back
behind
on.
Closed doors?
Yeah.
What if a player contracts coronavirus?
No, play on, come on. The likelihood is that
they are the fittest individuals.
Exactly,
in the world,
they're going to be fine. Like, they'll get over it in a couple of weeks. And then they'll be fine to go again.
But what about if there's like a 70% chance of 22 players getting sick? Are you okay with that because you're going to get over it?
What do you mean, 70% chance of?
I don't know what the... Like, so say it's... unbelievably contagious. Regardless of the severity of it, are you still wishing mediocre illness on these people?
Well, then they'll be. It hasn't been fully established yet, but more than likely they'll be.
Oh, I'm just picking figures out of the sky.
Well, no, but my point is, once you get it, very unlikely you're going to get it again. It hasn't been fully established that you have essentially become immune.
It's chickenpox.
And it's not quite chickenpox. It's the flu. You can get a second flu. It's not the flu, obviously, but. It's behaving.
You said it was the flu last week. You've changed your tune.
I have, yeah. I've done a bit of reading.
What have you read that has changed your tune?
Oh, God, I'm not telling you what I've read.
You read some CNN, New York Times, potentially? Is the United States scaring you?
No, the state's response has been very interesting. The denial, the lack of testing that's going on.
Praying?
It's going to be interesting to see what happens to Trump and his supporters in the aftermath of this.
Well, there's a lot of old people who support Trump.
Trump's pretty old himself.
And he's pretty old himself.
By all accounts, he's quite germophobic.
This is not just the flu to someone like Donald Trump.
No, it is absolutely not. It's like, it's a conspiracy out to get him. Tommy's saying we're creating hysteria and telling us to go. So I'll tell you what happened last night in the world of football. Pretty depressing if you're a Villa fan. Beaten 4-0 by Brendan Rodgers, Leicester City. So this was two goals from Harvey Barnes and Jamie Vardy. And that is now an 8-point gap between Leicester and fifth in the Premier League table. Defeat Leeds Villa 2 points from safety, but with the game in hand and those around them, but playing absolute muck at the moment. So more than likely doomed at this point to the drop. So they sacked their manager who brought them up, who played good football, who is a fan of the club, in the off chance that somebody saves them.
Well, it doesn't seem that the players are particularly trying at the moment. You can't blame some of them. You can see Jack Grealish looking around him and saying, I'm so much better than this. Do you expect more from him to actually kind of G'd the whole surroundings of the club up because they're better than everybody?
They bought too many players. They didn't trust the playing group that brought them up. They completely turned over the setup, and so you see this all the time.
The Reina rush was something quite spectacular. Like, it's something that you used to do when you were 12 on FIFA, is just hold down the triangle button and the keeper would come flying out of the side of the screen and you're like, that's hilarious. It's just come out of nowhere. That was basically Reina yesterday. Like, yeah. There was a real twist if you're watching it. It's like, oh, a wild Pepe Reina.
Hang on a second. There's a pitch invader. Oh, no, wait. He's wearing
an actual competitor.
Goalkeeper's uniform. It's a bit old. What? Champions League. Spurs aim to overturn a first leg deficit and reach the Champions League quarterfinals this evening when they travel to RB Leipzig. It's not going to happen. Jose Mourinho's side trail 1-0 from the first leg. Elsewhere, Valencia will look to overhaul a 4-1 defeat against Atalanta. Both games kick off at 8 o'clock. Andy Farrell hasn't ruled Joey Carby out of playing an Ireland summer tour to Australia. The Munster at half won't play again this season following ankle surgery. And in cricket, Ireland's cricketers wrap up their T20 series against Afghanistan today in India. Andrew Alberti's side have already lost the contest after defeat in the opening two games. The action gets underway at around 8:30. We'll keep you up to date on how that one goes. Right, here's what's coming up on the show for you. Going to head straight over to Cheltenham and join our man at the track, John Duggan, who's going to give us his first tip of the day, his nap of the day at 7:50. Then his piece is going to go live on offtheball.com for his tips across the day. Top five stories that we're covering this morning for you. Philippe Auclair is going to talk to us about Kylian Mbappe's sore throat and the game being played behind closed doors. Aidan O'Mahony has sat down with Owen, so you can expect lots of lines from the official Kerry Mafia himself.
He took a phone call. He didn't sit down with me. But
I'd say he was sitting there with the phone call. Although then again, you don't get that body by sitting down.
He was doing sit-ups while on the phone to me, I think. You just hear the crunch.
Paddy Power Cheltenham show is coming your way at 9 o'clock. We'll get some thoughts from Paddy Power, from John Duggan, and of course from Tom Malone as well. If you have any of the Cheltenham thoughts that you'd like to share with us, then you can get us on Twitter. @OffTheBallAM is the Twitter handle. You can just use the @OffTheBall Twitter handle. We're on that one as well. The hashtag OTBAM. And we're also now on WhatsApp, and it's 087 9 180 180.
Back to back 180s on for a 9 darter.
Exactly.
That's why the 9 is there before the 180s.
Is it?
Yeah. We've thought this through to the nth degree.
Okay. You're clicking there, and I don't really understand anything you're saying, but.
Your lack of darts knowledge again.
Time for the papers. OTB AM. Offthewall.com. James McLean's response to sectarian abuse is our lead story. That you're getting at the moment on offtheball.com. We also have Manu Tuilagi's tackling technique, a piece written by Cian Fahey. He's done an analysis of too laggy. And that hearing today, I think, it's going to be in Dublin. Presumably they're doing it on Skype. Maybe they're all flying over.
Well, as obviously an American football expert, Cian Fahey, I'd be interested to read that because it looked like an American football tackle. Just flinging yourself at another human being.
A brilliant NFL tackle.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Owen Sheehan has written a piece. That's you, Owen. I wrote a few words about the absolute lad. That is Joe Marler. Joe Marler and the Mount Rushmore of lad banter. Did you decide who else was on it?
Well, obviously Andy Gray and Richard Keys.
Oh, they're the first
And then
two.
I think the fourth head is just going to be a cry laugh emoji.
And any
or maybe
people,
this emoji, or maybe a beer emoji, or something like that. One of those three. Take your pick.
It can filter in and out.
It can do actually. It can just be a hologram. The fourth head.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that pieces up.
Loads of stuff up there as well. Davy Russell was on last night speaking with Joe. You can get his take on what's going to happen at Cheltenham in advance of the festival. He's got some great rides over the course of the week as well. And that'll wet your whistle this morning on offtheball.com. While you're listening to us in the background, obviously, here is the back page of the Daily Mail this morning to start with. Squeezes on, fixtures crisis worsens as virus hits hard. Sporting calendar continues to be ravaged by the coronavirus crisis, and a range of sports yesterday took action to prevent the spread of the virus. Obviously, the Six Nations clash with France, which we spoke about yesterday. Ireland against Slovakia in Bratislava is under threat. So Slovakia banned all sporting events for 14 days, which gives them 2 days of wiggle room. They've also said that anybody coming from a set number of countries needs to quarantine for 14 days. Their best striker is currently playing in China. China, one of the countries that they've named. Do they make a special dispensation for their best striker?
Well, do they make a special dispensation for Ireland and the UK? Because if you give it, so what,
14 days?
So that's 15th of March. Are we not going to be reaching peak coronavirus around the 15th of March or a couple of days thereafter? Which will certainly put Ireland, if we believe the worst case scenario, put Ireland into that list of countries that need to be quarantined, you'd imagine.
I mean, we've done such a good job of containment, though, and I don't think that we have anything to worry about.
I'm just flying a kite in the worst case scenario.
The GAA says it's monitoring the situation under advice from the HSE, but so far nothing doing there. Cheltenham's going ahead. The English government has got a headline in the Telegraph today, which I'll get to in a minute. And Vardy back in the zone. Vardy, such a lovable character. Vardy.
The Mirror this morning is £100 million Brum deal. United in talks for massive summer spree on teenager Bellingham and Grealish. It will be quiet this summer if they manage to bring those two kids to Old Trafford. And Vardy says rain is going to fall.
Jack Grealish is the same age as you. Pretty much.
Is he?
Close enough. You cannot call Jack Grealish a kid.
Can I not?
No.
What is he, like 21?
24.
Is he 24? Okay, really.
What age are you?
He's not a kid anymore. I'd be a year older than that. Paddy Whacked is the front page of the Irish Daily Mirror, by the way. I think that's top of the morning to you.
What year are you born?
94.
He's born in 95.
Yeah, kid.
Yeah, kid. Back page of the Daily Star this morning. Braced for a shutout. Slovaks to decide if playoff takes place behind closed doors, and Milan warns the GAA are in uncharted waters. And bookies fear black magic. So bookies are running scared. Rachel Blackmore will be the first woman to become a champion jockey at the Cheltenham Festival. Although she's not the favourite, but certainly there has been some money on Rachel Blackmore to be the champion jockey.
Daily Telegraph this morning is keep calm and carry on. As events across Europe are cancelled, the government tells sport in the UK to, as I say, keep calm and carry on. There's a 16-page guide to the festival then inside, and that is the Daily Telegraph this morning.
When is your tip of tipsters,
it's
wisdom of crowds?
Ready to rock. It's I was working on it this morning, so that is ready to open off offtheball.com very shortly. We'll get to it after 8 o'clock here.
Back page of the Herald this morning for you. Clucko's back. This is foreign games. Stephen Cluckson playing foreign sports. Can you believe it? Dubs ace makes his makes his return to action for Elmount. So I'm sure you all know who Elmount are. Division 3 of the AUL. And he played his part in a 3-1 triumph. So this is his official return from shoulder surgery. Obviously, Desi Farrell said he wouldn't play again until the end of March. But here he is, early March. And looks like he's back for full contact playing soccer. So he is fit. I recall Stephen Cluckson scoring an All-Ireland winning point in 2011 in front of 82,300 people, the report on strikeronline.ie noted. I worked out there were 82,288 less people watching as he stepped up to take this particular free. And they're also saying Slovakia games in the balance.
The Irish Independent this morning, it's a picture there of Barney Eastwood and Barry McGuigan. He passed away, obviously, yesterday. And Leinster fret over Saracens game. Champions Cup clashes, the latest events at risk of postponement due to coronavirus. Business as usual at Cheltenham. And then, as you mentioned, Ireland's Euro playoff in doubt after Slovakia's sporting ban.
The Times ban on fans will ruin us, warned clubs. Government officials were warned yesterday that ordering fixtures to be played behind closed doors could lead to financial ruin for clubs in certain sports and leagues. I wonder who is actually saying this. So the prospect of clubs being denied the revenue provided by selling tickets provoked deep concern from the English Football League, who represent football in the lower divisions, and from sports such as Rugby League, who fear that its clubs will be made bankrupt by the loss of gate receipts and doubt that insurance policies would offer sufficient protection. So essentially there's a row happening in the background between insurance companies, governments and sports leagues, where no doubt the sports teams have insurance for just such a global pandemic, but the insurance company's like, ah, it's an act of God. Don't have to pay for act of God. It's like, well, I'm an atheist, so pay up. That's what's going to happen with that. And they've got the story about Man United trying to sign that 16-year-old from Birmingham as well. Alan Green, the BBC Five Live commentator, is out at the BBC. Five Live going the RTE way and getting rid of people with distinctive voices. He no longer fits the profile, apparently. There are new people in favour who match the requirement in terms of bants. I was basically told, you don't fit our profile. I got a fair idea of what they meant by just listening to the output of the last year or so. It's not the organisation I love for so many years. I liked Alan Green. A lot of people don't thought he was kind of a bit arrogant. But I actually quite like when Alan Green was doing a game on the radio. You were like, even if it was a shit game, it sounded good.
He certainly was. There was a distinction about him. Like sometimes when you're listening to Match of the Day or watching Match of the Day, everything kind of sounds the same. Whereas Alan Green comes on, you're like, this is Alan Green. Like, and what would his catchphrase be? Something like Holy Moses. If Holy Moses is Marty Morrissey's line, there was something for Alan Green, something along those lines. I can't quite remember. But yeah, he was always entertaining on Match of the Day, I thought. Back page of the Sun this morning, a Slovakia sports ban, game set for 2 days later. And so this is obviously doubts about Ireland's Euro 2020 playoff in Bratislava. So the ban on all sporting and cultural events, which also includes games behind closed doors, is due to end on March 24th. So 2 days after the ban finishes is what they mean by that. And Reign of Terror is the headline from Leicester 4, Aston Villa 0 last night.
The Guardian saying they expect Joe Marler to get at least 12 weeks for groping Alan Wynne-Jones. Despite shadow coronavirus, over 250,000 are expected at Cheltenham over the next 4 days for Jump Racing's premier festival, and EFL clubs fear for future if games go ahead spectator-free.
Great front page of the Racing Post this morning. The wettest February on record, a global coronavirus outbreak, weeks of uncertainty amid the mounting anticipation. But after all that, this is Cheltenham. And then back of the Racing Post is lights out. Spurs set to suffer knockout blow in Germany. It's an 8 o'clock kickoff in Leipzig tonight.
Bank on Benny. This is the Examiner today. Ruby Walsh, Mullins Mayor, is nap of the week. And whistling at work, top GAA refs on challenges and criticism they face. John Fogarty, when it comes to winning, Kerry don't do sentiment. This is the analysis coming through now after the Tony Buckley announcement at the weekend. And fixture headaches mount as France clashes kick touch. Ireland's October, November is going to be pretty interesting. It's the world champion South Africa, it's Australia, it's Japan, it's Italy and France.
In October, November?
Yeah.
I totally missed the fact that it was already fairly jam-packed before you actually get into the...
So we only had three games.
But like in terms of quality.
Yeah.
Well, like three really high-profile games.
Like, I mean, the Japan game, you're like, ah, yeah, what's the big deal? But now it's like, oh, we owe them one. Mm. And actually, they play great rugby.
It will be very Irish for us to absolutely batter them in a non-World Cup year friendly.
Eight tries to nil.
Test. Eight tries to nil. Yeah, that's... Wouldn't be surprised if that happened.
Your rugby credentials slipped there. The mask slipped.
Yeah, it's fairly damaging for my reputation. The Irish Times this morning is Villa put to the sword as Leicester end winless run. Tottenham dare to keep positive after Bergwijn injury. And Ireland's playoff in doubt as Slovakia bans events. It's the Irish Times.
All right, it is 7:50. It's time to check in with John Duggan at Cheltenham.
The Cheltenham Show on Off the Ball. And they're on. Brought to you by Paddy Power. Cheltenham's coming home.
Ah, the blood is up. John Duggan, good morning to you.
Jaron Owen, how are we doing? Welcome to Cheltenham.
Yeah, it's a little bit eerie, I suspect, yesterday around Cheltenham, given that the first case of coronavirus was discovered in the town. But it's all systems go. Keep calm and carry on, says the Telegraph.
I'll be certainly doing that, Jaron Owen. I was in the town last night having my traditional pasta of a Monday. And I was surprised to see it very empty. It was very, very, very empty and it was very quiet. Normally, it'd be a lot more people around the town. But also, it was a really, really grim night, like weather-wise. It was like, you know, really bad weather. It was lashing rain and heavy winds, and it was really cold. And that also was probably a factor. I spoke to Ian Renton, the boss of Cheltenham, yesterday. It's on the Off the Ball social channels on Twitter. And it's all systems go. They're at the containment phase of the response to the coronavirus. They're not at the delay phase. And therefore, the 4 days will go ahead. I know you asked yesterday, and I did ask him about what happens if something sudden happens and maybe Thursday or Friday could be behind closed doors. That's not seen as a potential possibility. The 4 days will proceed just about, I think, here. But we're looking forward to a great 4 days of racing. 65,000 people here a day on average, and 28 races, and the Great Irish Challenge again.
Are there masses of whispers and gossip around the course in the days of Cheltenham? Is this something that you just have to try and tune out, or is this actually something that you need to desperately listen to try and divine if there is some good information in the midst of all the bad?
I think there's a few things. The market is very important. So the market last night is important. Shishkin was a big drifter last night. Who's been backed, especially in the handicaps? Who's their money for? There's a thing called odds checker, and you see like who goes blue and who goes pink. If you go blue, the horse has been backed. If it goes pink, the horse is drifting. Then there's about an 11 o'clock move. The market moves again at about 11 o'clock. And that's when I generally tend to make my phone calls home to my racing fraternity, my racing pals, and see. And this is part of it. This is part of the intrigue. This is part of the, you know, you have your pick made, and then you're trying to almost reassure yourself, confirm that everything is okay with your pick. What do you think about this? Have you heard this? Have you heard that? But sometimes then you can hear something. And a lot of sources, it all depends on the history of the source. Has the source been good to you in the past? Do they generally get good information? And can you rely on them? And some things you can rely on, some things you can't. But what they always say about Cheltenham, they're all trying here. Everybody wants to have a Cheltenham winner. And whether it's Willie Mullins or Giggins Townhouse Stud or JB McManus or the smallest trainer or Darver Star, the horse named after a GA club in Louth, everybody wants to have a winner here. So everybody's trying. So don't be put off if you fancy a 33-1 shot that your judgment is any way inferior to anybody else's.
A reminder, our Cheltenham coverage is brought to you all week by Paddy Power. Cheltenham's coming home. We are expecting the usual Irish crowd to show up, John. There's no sense that fewer Irish people are travelling because of coronavirus this year at all, is there?
The Irish Independent reporting that there were a few no-shows at Dublin Airport on the way, but I think that most people will be travelling, generally around 10,000 to 15,000, a lot of expats as well. The thing about it is, back in the day, before 2004, when it was a three-day festival, everybody would be coming for the 3 days. But now a lot of people might come in maybe for today and tomorrow, like Conor O'Dwyer, who I spoke to the other day, is doing that, and a lot of people then would be coming in on Thursday or even just Friday for the Gold Cup day. The Gold Cup day has kind of changed in recent years, even from the television figures. Most of the most watched races last year were on the Friday of Cheltenham. So the Gold Cup day has become a big beast. It's when we have the biggest crowd here, over 70,000 people, and the Gold Cup as well, obviously. And the fact that that's on a Friday, a lot of people coming up from London, a lot of people, the day revelers are coming out for Cheltenham. But I think we'll have a strong Irish contingent here, and it should be like any other festival. And hopefully we'll see some celebs as well. And hopefully we might even, I don't think we're going to see Shane Lowry, because he's probably at the Players' Championship in Florida. But he does have a horse running tomorrow, Theatre of War, in the Juvenile Hurdles. He's one to keep an eye out for.
Okay, has he got a chance?
I think he does. I think he's definitely got an each way chance. And he was a tasty price when I spoke to Gavin Cromwell last week. Theatre of War, he was about 33-1. Now, he might have come in. I haven't checked the price in the last day or so, but he's one to keep an eye on. And it's just great to see. I mean, we had, remember, Augusta Kate was a fancied horse here with Lee Westwood and Alan Shearer involved. And Alex Ferguson's had some horses and shares of horses here at Cheltenham. I think he's involved in Clan des Oboes still. So that's one of the fancied horses of the Gold Cup on Friday.
All right. John, the way this is going to work all week is that we're going to get your nap of the day. Nap of the day sounds like it's a can't miss. But sure, look, buyer beware, caveat emptor, all the rest of it. At 7:50 every morning, your main piece is going to go up on offtheball.com, and then we're going to have you back on the Paddy Power Cheltenham show every morning just after 9 o'clock. So what have you got for us this morning? What do you like today?
Well, I didn't build my reputation and my career, however good it is or bad it is, on backing odds on shots as a tipster. So Benny DeJoy, I think, will win the Mayor's Hurdle today, but it's 7-4 on with Paddy Power, and I can't have that. So I built my career on outsiders, and I'm going to go for, I would call it each way day. It's a tough card. We're 4 days. I feel like I'm starting off slowly, and we're going to build to a crescendo with a massive win on Friday. But then again, we could have a load of winners today. We just don't know. We could have a load of losers today. But the horse I'm going for, the Knapp, exclusively on OTBAM, is in the Champion Hurdle, the biggest race of the day, Cur Sublime, trained by Gordon Elliott and Meath, ridden by Davy Russell from Yall in County Cork. Cur Sublime is 12-1, was second at the festival last year in the Triumph Hurdle. Is only a five-year-old, but I think that in a wide-open race, if there is improvement from Cur Sublime from last year to this, he travels very well in his races. I think he'd have a chance of reaching the first four, Paddy Power Payne, a fifth of the odds, the first four. So 12-1, Cur Sublime to give the heart a flutter in the Champion Hurdle at half three.
Okay, we like those long odds, chance of running into the places, and who knows, maybe outperforming and sticking one home early on. I just looked up Theatre of War there while you were talking. In as far as 10 in some places, as big as 18 in others, so... there's been a fair bit of money for Theatre of War over the last few days. So Gavin Cromwell's fancy for the horse is obviously coming through, and people are backing that as well.
Yeah, he just said he had a bit of an each-way chance. And look, you could have so many conversations over the next few days with everybody. And we're gonna, I can talk to Johnny Ward and Tom Malone will have their views, and it could be completely different from mine. And that's great. Because everybody then has, and that's why Owen's feature is so great, that you amalgamate and you put all the tips into a stew and then you see what you come out with. But trust your own judgment and have a bit of fun, and just don't let lose or run yourself, I think is the key thing. And that's what I'll be doing today. I'll be backing each way. And I picked out one horse, which we'll tell you in the Cheltenham show, that nobody else has tipped. Of all the tipsters and the Racing Post and all that, and there's one horse that nobody else has tipped at 33-1. So there's always one of those that you can try and hopefully find that that might do the business. But it's going to be a long week.
What do you like about Cur Sublime today?
Travel. I just like his the way he travels in his races, and he's a horse that does work very well at home. He's a lot of speed, and I watched every single race of Cheltenham last year back about a month ago, because course, as Tom was saying yesterday, it's a bit like the Masters. Course form is so important here, because you got the hill, you got the undulations, you got the ups and downs. It's not a flat track like Aintree or Kempton. It's quite a testing track, and you need to have a lot of tactical speed. So generally, horses that run well at Cheltenham continue to run well at Cheltenham. And I just was so impressed visually by the way he ran last year. Five-year-olds, which he is, don't have a good record in the Champion Hurdle. Only two winners since 1985, but one of those was last year, Esport Allen. I think it's a wide-open race, a lot of scratches from the race, and I think that if he is strengthened up a little bit, I think he might make the frame.
All right, John, good stuff. We'll talk to you a little bit later in more detail about everything else going to happen today. That's John Duggan with us every morning here of Cheltenham Week, and all our Cheltenham coverage is, of course, brought to you by Paddy Power. The Cheltenham Show is 9 o'clock every morning. It's John Duggan, Paddy Power and Johnny Ward live from the racecourse, giving you all the inside information and all you need for the greatest show on turf. Tom Malone's going to be in the studio with me as well. As I said, it's all brought to you in association with our Cheltenham partner, Paddy Power. Cheltenham's coming home. Philippe Auclair and Aidan O'Mahony are going to be in the next hour. We're back after these with the top five stories of the day.
OTB AM on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station.
Every morning this week from 9 a.m, John Duggan will be live from the biggest festival on the racing calendar, Cheltenham. He'll be bringing you his top tips of the day, as well as exclusive interviews with all the top jockeys, trainers and pundits. Ger Gilroy, Tom Malone, Johnny Ward and Paddy Power himself will all share their racing insights and tips across the festival week. That's the Cheltenham Show, every morning at 9 a.m. with thanks to Paddy Power, Cheltenham's coming home. OTB Sports Radio, live 24/7 on the Go Loud app.
OTB AM.
All right. Every morning we do the top five stories that we're covering for you, both here on OTB AM and on offtheball.com. Our top five stories this morning at a minute past eight are the tipster table that Owen is currently, the little boffins in his head are working overtime. The hamsters are on the wheel. The lights are flashing on and off. And we're going to find out what the wisdom of the crowd is telling you, where you should be putting your money today. Andy Farrell's press conference yesterday threw up some nuggets, not many obviously, given that there's not that much to talk about. Cyrus Christie is in the papers today. He's done a very interesting interview about the issue of racism in football. We'll get to that. Champions League, some games being played behind closed doors. It will continue. It looks like it's going to continue for as long as possible. They've got a very straightforward schedule that they have to meet, and Villa are going down. I think we all know that at this stage. Hammered 4-0 last night. One of those abject performances where the spine is broken, the spirit is broken, and ultimately they are a championship team next season, it looks like. If you want to dispute any of that, if you want to talk to us about any of the things that we're talking about this morning, then feel free to get involved. 0879 180 180 is the number to send your WhatsApps to. Owen, the tipster table,
yeah.
The staple of Cheltenham.
Some great features across the newspapers this morning on Cheltenham, but I've just kind of sifted through the tips to get to the bottom of what consensus might be behind a horse. There isn't much on day one, as John said there a moment ago. It's an each-way day, it seems. There's one or two races where there is a clear consensus, but for the vast majority of them, there's a couple of horses that are getting most of the tips, so you don't really have one kind of standout option. We'll start from the start, Supreme Novices Hurdle at 1/2. A couple of horses here kind of joined with the amount of tips that they've been given. Shishkin at 4/1 and Fiddler on the Roof at 6/1, both getting 7 tips across the newspapers this morning. So the favourite in that one is Asterion Forlonge at 11/4, but not getting as much as Shishkin and Fiddler on the Roof. You can check the full piece out, by the way, on offtheball.com. I might go through the favourite or the most, the closest resembling thing to consensus that we have on each race, apologies for that, and then give you an outsider. So the outsider in the first race is Allart at 25/1, but tipped only by one person, Charlie Brooks in the Daily Telegraph. The 2/10, the Racing Post Arkell Challenge.
Do we know who won the Tipster Challenge last year?
I don't recall, but I remember Chris Cook of The Guardian had a particularly good week. Katie Walsh had an excellent week. John had a very good week last year, if I recall correctly. And Brian Flanagan, of the Irish Daily Star, was very strong, early doors anyway. So there are the names that definitely come to the top of my head. The 2/10 is the Racing Post Arkell Challenge Trophy Novices Chase. The favourite here is getting most of the tips this morning. It is Notebook at odds of 10/3. Looks to be one of the few favourites today that is backed by pretty much everybody. Second there is the second favourite, Fakir Duderi at 4/1. So Notebook is the one most tipped. Then, as an outsider here, the biggest odds you'll get from somebody tipping today is Rogue Viff at odds of 14/1. You've got Nick Fitzgerald of the Irish Sun and Ian Garhan of the Heralds tipping that one. The 2/50 then is the Ultimate Handicap Chase. The conditional is the closest thing we have resembling consensus in this particular race, odds of 15/2. You also have Rob Wright from The Times giving that. It says Nap of the Day, so that's the conditional at odds of 15/2, third favourite. Massive outsider tipped by Wayne Bailey of the Irish Independent in this race, 100/1. Ice Cool Champs, tipped obviously as an each-way bet by Wayne Bailey and the Irish Independent today. The 3/2, the feature of the day, Epitant has got most of the love today, the favourite at odds of 5/2. That is, of course, the champion hurdle. Super Sunday is also getting the exact same number of tips across the newspapers this morning. Super Sunday's at odds of 10/1, Epitant at odds of 5/2. So there might be a bit of value in Super Sunday today. A lot of people tipping him as their each-way. Brian Flanagan tipping him as his nap of the day.
Super Sunday.
Yeah.
And Curse of Bleem has obviously just been John Duggan's nap of the day.
Yeah, Curse of Bleem and Tom Segal of the Racing Post and Davy Russell are alongside John in terms of tipping Curse of Bleem today.
Davy Russell obviously on board Curse of Bleem. So.
Yeah, not a bad tip. And then the big outsider tipped in this race is Silver Streak at odds of 25/1, tipped by Paul Keeley in the Racing Post. Obviously an each-way bet there. The 4/10, the Mayor's Hurdle, is obviously... seems like a foregone conclusion when you look at the countless people tipping this. It's Benny Dizdew at 7/4 on. In terms of the biggest outsider tip today, Lady Buttons at odds of 28/1. Charlie Brooks of the Daily Telegraph is tipping Lady Buttons, obviously, in each way there in the Mayor's Hurdle going up against Benny Dizdew. And Honeysuckle is tipped by 3 racing writers this morning, odds of 10/3. The 4/50 then, the favourite Imperial Aura is getting a lot of love this morning, odds of 5/1. And outsider on that is Laura Schitzel at odds of 33/1. Katie Walsh of the Heralds is the only person tipping that. Actually, now that I say that, there are 3 people tipping 3 horses at odds of 33/1. Got Rob Wright of the Times tipping Knight in Dubai. And in Jarvie's Plate, also 33/1, is being tipped by Eamon Hames in the Irish Sun. So Lord Schitzel, Jarvie's Plate and Knight in Dubai are the outsiders in that one that have got a bit of love. And then Imperial Aura, the favourite at odds of 5/1, getting most of the love.
Brian Cooper on board, Lord Schnitzel.
Yeah. And then the 5/5, the final race of the day, the favourite carefully selected, also getting most of the tips today, odds of 15/8. And then an outsider, if you fancy, 18/1, Smoking Gun, Tom Pepper of the Irish Sun and Brian Flanagan of the Irish Daily Star with an each-way tip there on Smoking Gun at odds of 18/1. So the full piece available on offtheball.com momentarily, I'd imagine, and you'll be able to go through everything to see if you've got a fancy yourself, see who's tipping that and see if there's any thing resembling a bit of consensus on a horse that you fancy.
Yeah, if anybody has any questions about any specific horses that you'd like answered on the Paddy Power show, that's every morning from 9 o'clock. Use the hashtag OTBAM. We'll put your questions to John Duggan or Johnny Ward and we'll see if they think if your horse has any hope of coming through today. So just make sure you get them into us before 9 o'clock this morning. Use the hashtag OTBAM. So next, let's hear from Andy Farrell with the future of the 2026 Nations in doubt. Here's Andy Farrell talking after it was announced yesterday that Ireland's trip to France had been postponed, with the matches now most likely to take place before next season's November internationals.
See, I don't know how it's going to turn out, because five games over the autumn. I don't know whether that's going to happen. You know, four is difficult enough. Four games on the bounce is always difficult enough. Teams always try and schedule the November for a tier two or whatever, and then which gives a bit of a development side of things, doesn't it? To the flavour of the November calendar. So we don't know what's going to happen. We presume that there's certainly going to be one game played in and around that period, but we've not had anything confirmed.
So would you put some things, if that was being proposed, you would object to that, that you wouldn't want to postpone that?
No, I'd look at it. I'd certainly look at it. But I suppose if we look at it like that, then you've got to look at the whole picture of the November calendar, haven't you, from our perspective. I mean, we've got three really tough games coming up. We've got two against Australia, and then we've got South Africa, Australia and Japan. You know, it's a tough old five games, isn't it? You know, and then you're throwing in two for us, which is effectively, hopefully, a semi-final and a final regarding the Six Nations. It changes the goalposts a little bit, you know, so it takes some reflection.
What do you think is going to happen? So was there a hint that maybe one of these games gets played in May?
Possibly, I guess. Like after the Champions Cup final, potentially.
Or if there's no Irish team in the Champions Cup final, you could always play it.
Absolutely. Is there? You'll probably have somebody.
Play the Italy game without the Leinster players.
It would be a good opportunity. Like even Leinster B would probably beat Italy. To be honest with you, you wouldn't even need Ireland B.
They're not great.
Leinster is front runners. I don't know. Like, it's obviously would have been ideal had they got to go this weekend and try and play France after a 6-day turnaround. Not going to happen now. France will probably get better the more time goes on. They're obviously a very young team. But I think perhaps in an overall sense, it might be not the worst thing in the world that Ireland just have a little bit more time, get back to their provinces. Leinster will probably rack up a bit of form. Like, we still just don't know what impact this England result is going to have, because we haven't seen them back it up with the second games or the game after that. So it's going to be an interesting few months. Like, I think the likelihood is that it'll be the end of the year, won't it?
Yeah, certainly. Guess. It's just his point there about the five games unlikely. Like, it seemed like there was something else going on, that he kind of had some sense of what might happen. There wasn't very much else there. He says that there's a possibility that they might have Joey Carby back for the Australia tour. That would be great. It would be an opportunity for him to play some rugby, and certainly it would be an opportunity for us to see what it might be like with him and the team. Another lost season, obviously, for Joey Carby. Not great for his career development at this point, but he's still very young in professional rugby terms. 10 minutes past eight this morning, I want to talk to you about next about this Cyrus Christie story that the Daily Mail have here, the two-page spread. When you're sent an image of four black people hanging from a tree and nothing gets done, how do you feel? This is an interview with Ian Ladyman. I just want to read you the first couple of paragraphs on this, because it's very interesting, particularly relevant. When Cyrus Christie became a target for racist abuse while playing for the Republic of Ireland, he went to see the Gardaí. They seemed like they'd be great and gave me a number to call if I needed them, Christie told Sportsmail. A while later, I called it and it didn't even work. We never heard from them again. It's then that you realise there really is no point. Ireland were beaten 5-1 by Denmark, and in the aftermath of that, Cyrus Christie was targeted by racists online. There was a picture of, as he says, four black people hanging from a tree, and then the line was, "You're next," was beside it. It's clear as daylight, some of the stuff. I had one guy send me the four black people hanging from a tree with "You're next," saying that they're going to kill me, and there's a picture and names there, but if I was to put out everything I got, people would be surprised. You say the odd thing now and then, I bring up the odd one and people are like, "Rise above it, why are you giving them airtime?" I'm trying to put it out there and to show this is what goes on. I had a thing of 15 posts on Instagram and 5 comments minimum were racist. 15 posts straight. I'm posting once a week on average, so that's a couple of months. And then he goes on, and so that was actually from a podcast a couple of months ago. I just was getting the details of when it was. And when there was a petition calling for you to be lynched, how do you feel? If it was the other way around, we know how quick it would be sorted. That's the issue. So he's just saying that no one cares about racism enough, that not enough is done about it. And that he talks about Gary Neville and Raheem Sterling, and when they raise the issue, people take it seriously because they have profile. But if Cyrus Christie's raising the issue, it's not big enough because he's not famous enough. There's no celebrity heft behind it in some ways. So
it's horrific. Like the whole thing about don't sink to their level is just a ridiculous notion when it comes to racism. Like, it's something that you might say is an acceptable thing to say when somebody's getting trolled or getting mild abuse online, but this is a whole new level. Like, this is, and
well, it exists in the real world. Yeah. Like, and it has real world repercussions is the thing. He talks about growing up in Coventry and Coventry's gang culture, and how when he was 14, himself and a friend were assaulted in school, and then there was retribution sought the next day, and they called in for him, but he wasn't allowed to go because he had homework to do. And one of his mates who called in for him ended up getting stabbed 16 or 17 times, and it was like, so now he's trying to give back, and he's got a partnership going with the Bournemouth striker Callum Wilson. They've set up an academy to try and help kids in the area just become better people. And Fulham seem like they're quite progressive. So obviously his sister was racially abused at a Fulham game, and they took a case, but the case was dropped, and now Fulham are taking a civil case and helping them to take a civil case. So the whole notion here is that we're very good in Ireland going, oh, that's an English problem. Mm. It's not an English problem. It's
the number doesn't
problem.
Even work.
Just to follow up on that story, obviously we've contacted the Gardaí this morning, and we've asked them if they've got a comment to make on the suggestion that he was provided with a phone number that didn't work or a connect, and have the Gardaí followed up and contacted him again following the issue being raised. And we've asked them as well if they want to make any comment about his suggestion that the Irish police force are ineffectual when it comes to assisting those who've been the victim of racial abuse. So we'll see if the Garda Press Office has anything to say about this story this morning. But pretty grim reading. But fair play to Cyrus Christie for coming out and reminding us all that, like, this is him playing for Ireland. Mm. This is him playing for our country that gets him this abuse, which is completely unacceptable.
We seem to be always living in a world where we're two steps away from racial abuse because we view everything through an English prism, and then the English prism is always telling us that this isn't something that exists in England, it only exists in Eastern Europe. When, now granted it does, when they go to somewhere like Bulgaria and get the abuse that they get, it does exist, but it seems that even the British media are kind of keeping this problem at arm's length, and if they're doing that, then we feel we're two steps away from that. So like, that's a really, really worrying sign that if there is a serious racial threat made, that the help actually isn't there for somebody to make a complaint.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's grim but important reading this morning, and we'll obviously follow that story with the Gardaí as things go on. Champions League?
Champions League, yeah. Any chance for Spurs tonight?
I don't think so. I think that Leipzig are playing really well. They're kind of built to beat a team like Spurs.
This Leipzig team is going to be the team we look back on in whatever 5 or 6 years.
New Porto.
It'll be on Instagram, and people will be like, "Oh, remember that team before they broke up?" And everybody will be like, "Yeah, we appreciated how good they all were as individual players at the time." But in reality, we definitely don't.
No, because we did our preview of it, and it's like, "Oh, there's no superstars in the team 2 or 3 weeks ago with Uli Hess."
And then give it like 1-2 transfer windows, and all these people will be household names, you'd imagine. Unless, of course, this Leipzig thing takes off and manages to go to the next level, at which point he might hang around the club. It's a similar but not identical situation to what's going on at Dortmund at the moment in terms of them trying to keep their superstars. Maybe Leipzig just have a bit more of this wild money to fling at their players and might be able to actually take this rocket to the next level. So, yeah, like I can't imagine Spurs are going to be able to turn this thing around. It's obviously only 1-0. Like, Leipzig probably should have scored 2 or 3 in that first leg, and they should be out of sight completely. So he'd always give a Jose Mourinho side a chance, but it seems that even that phrase is losing all credibility with every passing week. This has happened so quickly that we've reverted to Jose Mourinho being Jose Mourinho, a overly pragmatic style of play that actually isn't that effective.
Certainly not anymore.
Doesn't seem that way. So, yeah, it would be...
He just needs a pre-season, Owen. He just needs a pre-season to get the players fit, because they weren't fit when he got it. He hasn't said that yet, but...
I would all, like, you've obviously got Valencia against Atalanta tonight as well. Valencia 4-1 down. You'd almost give Valencia a better chance than he would Spurs in Leipzig tonight. I realise that that will be played back to me if Spurs manage to do the business tonight, but even that 3-goal deficit looks a more pleasant prospect for Valencia given the way Spurs are going at the moment. Tomorrow is going to be unbelievable. Tomorrow is like a proper triple threat of television screens.
Oh yeah, go on.
Because you've got Manchester City against Arsenal at 7:30. You've got Paris Saint-Germain against Dortmund, which is obviously...
Why is anybody watching Man City against Arsenal? It's like the Liverpool fans are watching.
Two top quality Premier League sides. And Liverpool against Atletico Madrid as well.
If Arsenal win, it's like the greatest night of... If Liverpool go through and Arsenal win, it's them like coasting into a league title victory the following weekend?
Yeah, it'll be only one more game to win the title, and it'll be down to 3 points if Manchester City get beaten tomorrow night. Like, it's obviously, we'll get into this tomorrow morning, I'm sure, in more detail, but it really is a hinge moment that we're at with Liverpool tomorrow night, that they are back on track, that it's obviously a fantastic season, given the Premier League is in the bag and they've been waiting so long for it. But this is now the opportunity for them to go to the next level, park the Premier League over the next fortnight, get into a Champions League quarter-final, and who knows where the sky is for them this season. So I think after their weekend's results, you have to be expecting Liverpool to get the business done tomorrow night.
They could win it at Everton. That would be...
Is that this weekend or the following weekend?
The 15th. Remember the 15th. That's this weekend, isn't it?
Yeah. So they need Arsenal to do them a favour and then go and beat Everton.
Yeah, I mean, look, and obviously Everton demoralised after their 4-0 defeat at the weekend. So so you're saying tonight, don't bother watching any of this stuff. Tomorrow night's the night. Tomorrow night's the night. Come back to me then.
Well, two good comebacks could happen tonight, but they won't.
Okay, and then Villa going down. There's not much to talk about here. It's,
how do you feel?
Disappointed because they had flashes during the Premier League season. I always actually was very concerned about the style of play that they have is very open, but... it required a surge in belief and confidence, and the team is so different, it seems, from the team that actually brought them up, that they don't have a reservoir of good results and team spirit that has come through. It's like they did that stereotypical thing of getting a bunch of players in, some of whom it's going to turn out really good. This is exactly what happened the last time when Camoli signed loads of players and several of them turned out to be really good. Idrissa Gueye, Adama Traore, players who should be like players who are the bedrock of a team in the Premier League, but they brought them all in. There was no team building. They didn't introduce them in, okay, so now we understand exactly what our team's formation and shape is supposed to be. You're going to add in right here. It's like everybody go in, throw the shit against the wall, see what happens. And it slid off. It didn't stick.
It really did. Like, it's so, what are you doing? Are you backing Dean Smith?
I think that you've got to decide. You've two choices, right? You have, I don't know who's out there. Like, is Pochettino going to come in and take the gig for like 6 weeks?
Aston Villa.
I mean, what do you offer him? 10 million quid for 6 weeks' work?
So we've got Chelsea, Wolves, Liverpool, Manchester United, Arsenal, a trip to Everton, a trip to West Ham as your remaining fixtures. This isn't going to happen.
No.
They do have a game in hand on Watford at the moment.
It doesn't, yeah.
And if they won that game in hand, which is the Newcastle game, I think they would be ahead of Watford and out of the relegation zone. But it just doesn't look like it's going to happen at the moment. So no, Mauricio Pochettino probably won't come into Aston Villa. But what an appointment he would be. Go into the Championship for a while and bring them back up, but it's just a ridiculous notion.
No, but like, so you don't, sorry, no, it's a strict, you're gone in the summer no matter what. If you stay up, we'll find somebody else. Don't worry, we're not saddling you with this crap. Who do you get is the question, right? Mm. I mean,
Big Sam.
It's the actual Big Sam. That's about it. 20 minutes past 8 this morning here on OTBAM. You're very welcome along. If you've just joined us, we've plenty more coming your way, talking Cheltenham from 9 o'clock. But now we want to go and talk a little bit about what's going on in France with regards to the coronavirus. Obviously, the news that we expected was officially confirmed yesterday that the Ireland-France game is going to be postponed. And the Paris Saint-Germain-Dortmund game in the Champions League is going to go ahead. And there's been a lot of chatter around that. We also now know that... Kylian Mbappe has a sore throat. So, Philippe Auclair, good morning to you. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you.
How's your throat?
It's pretty good. I'm not coughing, and I think I'm absolutely safe to talk to at the moment.
Great. How is Kylian Mbappe, more to the point? Do we know? Are we getting like a lie? Is somebody camped outside Kylian Mbappe's house at the moment in the hope of having a Harry Redknapp-style conversation with him through his car window?
He has a sore throat, as you said. He's got a common cold, as I believe they're called. No no reason to worry about him particularly. So, but you can be sure that conspiracy theorists and coronavirus conspiracy theorists will have plenty to say about that. But he's fine. He's fine. He's just got a little cold.
Well, that's good news because we don't know what's going to happen when the first footballer contracts the coronavirus. Certainly not when it's like one of the best footballers in the world, 24 hours out from an absolutely massive game in the Champions League. What is the scenario in terms of these Champions League games? The Paris Saint-Germain Borussia Dortmund game is obviously going to go ahead, and yet the rugby match isn't.
Well, it's going to go ahead in an empty Parc des Princes, which is it's going to be very, very odd. I think we had a rehearsal of that in a way when we watched the game in Serie A between Juve and Inter over the weekend. But it's actually creating a little bit of a problem, and not just because the public are not in won't be allowed in the stadium, but because of the reaction of the PSG fans, which, to be honest, is has been a display of complete imbecility that, honestly, is absolutely shocking. Because basically they're asking the ultras, they're asking the fans to go to the stadium and completely ignore all the health and safety procedures and to gather around the stadium in huge numbers. So you can imagine what it's going to be like on the night. I hope they see the light of reason in the end. I'm not too convinced because there's been the reaction to the decision taken by the government to ban all gatherings with more than 1,000 people in confined spaces has been particularly hostile from a number of football supporters groups. I mean, it's very sad to say that, but the French police will be there in force. I think they're talking about 400 to 800 police force around the stadium to enforce the exclusion zone. But apparently there are people who are willing to put everybody else at risk to be there. That's where we are at the moment, I'm afraid.
Is this in keeping with the PSG ultras, the imbecility that you speak about? Is that exactly what would characterise them as a group?
I wouldn't go that far. I'm sure there are some great people, and but there is a fringe in this ultra movement, and I wouldn't castigate the whole ultra movement with this kind of judgment. I only do that because this particular group of people, the Ultra de Paris, have spoken out. And they've actually gone on French radio, French national radio, asking people to gather around the Parc des Princes for the occasion. Now, if that's not a proof of imbecility, I don't think anything else is.
In terms of the actual football on the field, it looks at the moment like it could well be another round of 16 exit for PSG.
Yes. In fairness, even without the measures taken by the French government, I think most people would be quite worried. Even though the scoreline, you know, you look at it, you think, oh, 2-1, you know, you can do something about that. But it's more the manner of the performance and the fact that there are so many problems at the club, within the club at the moment, that you feel, okay, it's going to be the usual. It's spring. The swallows arrive. The primroses pop up, and PSG gets out of the Champions League. And it's just as good an indicator of what the season is. And yes, the manner of their defeat in Dortmund, the manner of the various games that they've played recently, and especially, I would say, I think there's a malaise within the dressing room, which is not related to the virus. It's just related to the fact that Thomas Tuchel is finding it life very, very difficult, that there are a number of fault lines within this dressing room, and that you wonder what's going to happen come the end of the season. So it's not a good atmosphere. A 2-1 down, you would think, we've got a decent chance here. But that's not the way people think about it. There is a general atmosphere of negativity around the club, which is quite hard to comprehend, I must say, sometimes, but which is real, and which no doubt will affect all the players.
It seems Neymar was particularly unhappy after the first leg in terms of potentially being forced to play, I think, Philippe. Was that the situation?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's not the relationship that has soured. Neymar, since he came back, has actually been probably PSG's best player, you know, match in, match out. Then there were the problems when he was injured and was not injured, according to him, and he was left to convalesce when he would have liked to be on the field. The medical staff from PSG decided otherwise. He didn't take it very nicely, and you know, even more embarrassingly, he decided to go public about that. So, yes, it's not he's not in a good mood. Nobody's in a good mood. He hasn't been to the carnival this season, which is the first time in many, many, many years. So that makes him even more angry. And yes, the atmosphere is not great with him. If you add to that that Mbappe has this cold, then is a doubt, obviously. And the fact that there are, you know, Massimo Verratti is also suspended, which is a huge loss. And you have a... it's not a bunch of happy bunnies. That's the way I would put it.
Kylian Mbappe with a sore throat and Neymar not being able to go to carnival sounds like the worst crisis to ever hit a football club.
Something like that. Maybe we shouldn't mention the problems that Nasser Al-Khelaifi, the chairman of the club, also has with a number of people who are interested in his activities. But that's a different matter altogether, I'm sure.
Is Neymar going to be at the football club next season?
Good question. Officially, the line is yes, absolutely. Otherwise, many people are having their doubts. You see, at the moment, it just doesn't quite make sense the way that the team has been built. There are too many people, too many attacking players of too great a talent, if you see what I mean. You know, a hyperabundance of talent, which means that somebody's going to go at some point. Now, obviously, of these talents, you would say that the first two are Neymar and Mbappe, so you want to keep them, whatever the cost is. And unfortunately, these are the two that there are the most rumours about. I mean, it's not just Neymar, by the way, it's also Kylian Mbappe. And the entourage of the players has certainly not discouraged people from spreading those kind of rumours. We know that, I mean... we've got to try and understand how much of the current problems are linked to the unease surrounding Thomas Tuchel, who was supposed to be a solution for PSG, at long last a manager who was going to look at the interests of the club long term and build a team, not just for a season, but for 5-10 seasons to come. It hasn't happened. And in fact, Thomas Tuchel has exactly the same problem that every single manager has had before him at the club since the Qataris took over. And there doesn't seem to be any great plan in place. And then on top of that, obviously, you've got the situation with the players and the two top players, two of the top players in the world, who are wondering if PSG genuinely is the place they want to be in to win the titles, to pursue the careers. In a league where they've played, honestly, pretty badly, and they'd still find themselves a zillion points ahead of everybody else. So, you know, it all makes sense, and it all makes no sense, if you see what I mean.
Yeah. Philippe, just to go back to the coronavirus stuff, France has essentially said that all Ligue 1 matches until the 15th of April are going to be behind closed doors or limited to 1,000 fans. What's the response been like from the French public? Is there a high level of panic, a low level of panic? What's going on?
I was in France just a few days ago, and I was struck by how paranoid people were. I was struck by the blanket coverage in the media. I mean, you genuinely couldn't switch on a television or radio without hearing horror stories about the coronavirus. I honestly thought that this, you know, this is a neurotic country. And the response has been, you'll have to excuse me for saying that, but it's been imbecilic. As in, at the same time, the same people are completely paranoid, and they're completely oblivious of the real dangers that we're facing right now. So the fans have been saying things such as, and I've been on the receiving end, you can imagine, in social networks of a number of interesting opinions, shall I say, because of that. They're saying, well, you know, why is it that we're having this and we're having that, and Disneyland is still open and this and that, and people still take the tube. And you try to explain to them, it's not quite the same thing from having, you know, 40,000 people in a confined space for about 2 hours. But it's getting you nowhere. I'm afraid that it's not in France, not yet. I think it will come. We're still at a stage of both paranoid fear and denial. It's not a great cocktail.
No.
And no, it's not. And it's linked to the political situation in the country. It's linked to the social situation in the country. And it's linked to the actual, you know, the fact that France is, after Italy, the most affected country. I mean, we've, you know, I don't know what the reaction would be in Ireland or in Britain if suddenly you had five members of parliament who were at home with coronavirus and your minister of culture who was actually in hospital, which is the case in France. So we shall see. But the reaction at the moment, you know, is a bit crazy because people say, oh, why are they preventing us from attending football? As if football, you know, were really the most important thing in the world, when quite clearly it is not. And, you know, to quote Jorge Valdano, of all the things which don't matter at all, it's the most important, but nothing more than that. And it seems that people still haven't realized that. And the fans' reaction to the banning of gatherings of more than 1,000 people in a single place has been so far pretty poor, I'm afraid.
Are Monaco the only team? Did I read that correctly? That they're the only one who aren't? Is that because they don't have 1,000 fans?
That's cruel of you to say that. They sometimes manage to get 2,000 or 3,000. That's what I've heard. To be honest, I was talking to you, I was desperately trying to get a response from Ligue 1 Conforama. And believe it or not, there is actually, you go to their website in French or in English, you go to their Twitter account, you go to social networks account, there is absolutely no trace of any statement whatsoever about the coronavirus.
Right.
That should tell you plenty about the state of affairs with football in France at the moment.
Philippe, you've been covering football for a long time at this point, very clued in on the English response and what they're doing. Do you see these leagues all finishing as either on time or this season? What do you expect to happen?
I mean, I'm no specialist, but if you judge it by, you know, what's happened in other countries, and basically you see, it's like watching, being on the shore and watching a wave. So you have a pretty decent idea of what the way, how the wave is going to behave. I would say that we've got to take what's happened in China, in Southeast Asia, when you will have seen that the World Cup qualifiers have all been postponed. In Korea and Japan, that was yesterday. You see what's happening in Italy. The best case scenario, if I can use the expression best case, is matches played behind closed door. My own feeling is that football will stop, and that we're going to end up with competitions that are not finished. That's my own feeling, and I don't quite know how else we can, unless there's a miraculously the virus disappears. I don't think that there is any other solution. And that to deny this possibility is basically to be, you know, to blind ourselves to what is far, far more important than knowing whether Liverpool is going to be champion for the first time since 1990.
Yeah.
A bit more important to have people not dying, isn't it?
100%, right. I absolutely agree with you. The one thing that, in times of crisis, the old Roman bread and circus, if everybody is home, stuck, and they don't play the football matches, I do wonder if there's actually a case to be made for a certain sports event to go on behind closed doors to give everybody communal TV experiences.
Yeah, you can. I mean, and there are, you know, you cannot stop living. You shouldn't die because you don't want to die. And you can also die and you're in the soul, so to speak. No, there are events which will... football is different in as it's all about also getting together. You know, it's, I think, one of the reasons why football matches will be affected. It's not just because you've got 70,000 or 40,000, or in the case of Monaco, 2,000 people gathering in a confined space, which is in the open air. And to be honest, if people are careful, it's probably not that dangerous. But what is dangerous is also all the congregation going to the game, going to the bar, going to the pub, talking to each other, being in confined spaces. And this is what is just as dangerous. So you can understand what is happening. But I agree with you. There's going to be an element of bread and circuses to it, and I'm sure that every single step and measure is going to be taken for this to be the case. But on the other hand, at the moment we're dealing with probably a spike coming. We have the very clear example of how being quite definite in our response can work, which is the case in South Korea and in China at the moment. So we should take them as examples. We'll see what happens with Italy, which is honestly a catastrophe for this country. And we don't want this to happen. So prevention is better than cure. And let's hope that common sense prevails. And if it means that we've got to wait a little bit more to have our fix of football, well, so be it. If it means that Euro 2020, which is, by the way, shown to be the absurdity that everybody said it would be, with the competition being played all over the continent, which was crazy anyway, how this is going to happen, I genuinely don't know. I genuinely don't know how it's possible, because there's going to be delays in every single competition.
Yeah. All right. Philippe, great to have you with us this morning. Thanks a million.
Thank you.
Philippe Auclair giving us some thoughts, very prescient about what might be coming down the tracks. The Irish Women's National Team Euro 2021 qualification campaign continues in Montenegro on Wednesday evening. Last night, the Ireland head coach Vera Pauw was on talking to Joe, and here she is talking about Denise O'Sullivan and her influence on the football pitch after she was compared to N'Golo Kanté. Have a look.
What jumped out watching via the television is just how exceptional Denise O'Sullivan really is in midfield. Can you talk to us about her performance on Thursday? Because everything she did on the ball was fantastic. And then, I mean, she's like N'Golo Kanté off the ball in terms of winning back possession.
Yeah. Well, you summarise it very well, because that is her strength. She's both creative, but also the first one in winning the ball back. The first one who takes the initiative in winning the ball back. And she's defending from the attacking side. So if somebody is putting pressure on the ball, she's always coming on the other side to close it down and to box in. But also, she's very flexible in stealing that ball, turning away, and then immediately have a very good first pass after. Mm. And she always relates that to going forward. So, she's very, very important in our game. But there's more people, more players, more important. Huh?
Yeah, for sure.
Every player has their role, and she's exceptional, that is true, but we've got more very, very good players, and every single player has the role that, and without any of those players, we can do it. So, yes, she's very good, but we have more players that are very good.
Vera Pauw there giving us her thoughts on Denise O'Sullivan, and that game is on Wednesday evening. So Wednesday afternoon against Montenegro. Now, Tom Malone is here. Tom, how are you?
I'm good, yeah.
I was just stretching my legs. There was a panic outside.
Absolute panic.
If you sit in the same spot, you reach a certain age, you sit in the same spot, you get a bit of cramp. It's we've got one of those finely honed athlete bodies now.
Yeah. Like, we're all not like Tommy Rooney out there in the box. We're training 5-6 nights a week. You know,
he's up and down all day, running in, running out.
Yeah, it's not. It's
stretching
not like
muscles.
yes, well, we're not allowed to talk about his little grill, are we?
His grill?
His little Weight Watchers grill that he uses.
Oh, yeah. What happened?
Well, yesterday, Tommy made an omelette in the office. An omelette about the size of... Well, his little grill looks like something you might get in a Christmas cracker. It's about this size, so it's by Weight Watchers. So that's Tommy's crucial protein loading, I guess, as part of the swim for a mile. And obviously his, GAA career, it's very important.
I went into the kitchen and was like, oh, we've got some new gear. Because the kitchen is a small, there's like a coffee machine and there's a microwave and there's nothing else. There probably is a toaster.
Yeah.
But there was like something new. I was like, ooh, this is like a George Foreman. It turns out Tommy brought his own thing.
Yeah, brought it on.
This is not for general use. This is like exclusive to...
And again, it's like handbag size as well. It's not like a big, massive George Foreman you can bring in.
He says once we're clear of coronavirus, it's for general use at that point. But in the meantime, hands off. Yeah. No sneezing.
Two weeks is a introduction period.
Right, we're short on time because you're coming back to us at 9 o'clock. Yeah, we're going to talk Cheltenham at that point.
Obviously, we start off with Cheltenham very briefly, though. One of the key racing events of the year. Day one of Cheltenham Festival. Seven races on the card. Champion Hurdles the key at 3:30. The going is soft. That's going to change overnight. That's crucial. The big race of the day probably is a Champion Hurdle, but one of the most fascinating is the Mayor's Hurdle at 4:10. Benny DiGio is odds on favourite, looking to atone for last year, and Willie Mullins says he has some unfinished business in the race.
I like the soft ground. I like the fact that she could have won over the track. She was very unlucky last year. I'd like to go back and get a bit of unfinished business done.
And onto football then. Leicester City, of course, secured a first Premier League win since the end of January last night when they got the better of Aston Villa by 4-0 at the King Power Stadium. Jamie Vardy and Harvey Barnes both got a brace as Brendan Rodgers' team moved to within 4 points of Manchester City in second place. Villa remain in the relegation zone, 2 points adrift of safety, but boss Rodgers says he's happy with their return to form.
It was much more like us. Every team goes through a little blip, but for us, they're a really, really honest group of players that have really, at this point, been absolutely brilliant.
Meanwhile, in the Champions League, Jose Mourinho says he's confident his side can execute something special this evening. They're a goal down against RB Leipzig in the return leg of the Champions League tonight. And despite the squad being ravaged by injuries, Mourinho says he's hopeful.
I just feel that the boys deserve something special. And I think the boys, they deserve this kind of happiness that a victory in a knockout Champions League can give. But sometimes in football you don't get what you deserve. But in this moment we are not in conditions to accept anything.
Meanwhile, at the Mestalla, of course, game that we played behind closed doors, Valencia up against it, they're 4-1 down to Atlanta after the first leg in that one. Both those games get underway at 8 o'clock. There's 3 matches tonight in the EA Sports Cup. Non-league ECC United take on Cove. Bray Wanderers travel down the 11 to Exford, and Galway United entertain Athlone Town. The other game is off there. Longford Town and Cockhill Celtic doesn't go ahead due to that waterlogged pitch. While Andy Farrell has not ruled Joey Carberry out of playing in Ireland's summer tour to Australia, the Munster head half won't play again this season following ankle surgery. But Farrell says if Carberry gets back up to speed come the summer, he could be considered for the trip down under.
Gutty for Joey. He's been through a lot over the last few seasons, but I've spoken to him a couple of times, and his luck will turn. You know, he will. He needs to do the right thing and get himself fully fit, and we'll make sure that we help on with Munster to try and make that happen. We certainly won't throw him back in if he's undercooked, but if he's going great guns by then, he's in the frame like everyone else.
Yeah, that's Andy Farrell and Joey Carberry. I mean, really, I feel bad for Joey Carberry because Ross Byrne and then Byrne Jr. Will go come along and look like going to usurp and they're really at the 10 slot. But yeah, he needs to play, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think though he's got that Andy Reid thing going on where every passing day that he doesn't play, everybody's like, oh look, let's get him back in the team.
Yeah.
Tom Stuff is up on offtheball.com. He's gone through the card. Going to go through the card with us a little later on, a bit more detail.
I think we're all going to end up with one at a big price over the course of the day today. So, and they're all different as well in different races. So thankfully we will have a spread of
so five or each way on that, and you'll have no money left. Right. It is 8:44 this morning, this Tuesday morning. You're watching OTB AM. We are just a few hours away from the start of Cheltenham. Our Cheltenham special with Paddy Power is coming your way at 9 o'clock. In the meantime, the Connecticut Night Run ambassador, Aidan O'Mahony, joined Owen on the line yesterday as they launched this year's Connecticut Night Run, which is taking place in April. Have a look.
OTB AM on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station.
Runners of all abilities and ages are welcome to take part in the Connecticut Night Run. It takes place on Sunday, the 26th of April in Dublin. You can start the 10k distance on the quays and run through the heart of the city, past iconic landmarks under the night sky. There's great scenery, a fantastic atmosphere and an unforgettable experience. You can register online now at nightrun.ie. And I'm delighted to say that Aidan O'Mahony, former Kerry footballer and ambassador for Connecticut Night Run, is with us on the line now. How are you, Aidan? Thanks for taking the call.
I'm good, Owen. How are you?
All well, all well. There's only one place to start, really, the big news out of Kerry over the course of the weekend. Donny Buckley on the way out. He will no longer be involved with Peter Keane's setup. What was your initial reaction when you heard this news?
Yeah, I suppose disappointment. I know Donny, and I suppose I know his kind of love for the game, love of football, love of Kerry as well. And it was just disappointing. I suppose I was there in 2011 when Donny was involved, and I found him very good, I suppose, defensively. He's a great way of working with, I suppose, defenders and one-on-one, and but I suppose he brought something different to my game in this. When you get up man marking, he knew the opposition forward inside out, and he probably brought that kind of attacking mentality as well that we've seen with Mayo over the last couple of years. That's kind of held on to as well. I just think for me, he's a very kind of positive fella as well. So he'll obviously be last round for this.
Yeah, absolutely. So what exactly does he do then? Is it working on the art of the tackle? You mentioned working on opposition there, so he's obviously involved in the tactical element of being a defender too.
Yeah, I just think when he came aboard us in 2011, he just kind of broke down the tackling and started off from the very basic where you're starting with your feet and then it was all about making, I suppose, contact with the player first before you ever even thought about the ball and stopping him up, and then, you know, learning how to strip the ball from him. And I think his biggest thing was that, I know myself, when we were playing big games, that he knew the forward that you were marking, what leg he was going to kick with and what runs he'd make, and, you know, probably what they wouldn't like you to mark him differently, and that, you know, that at least when you're going to the game, then you have that confidence. And that's what I found that was very beneficial to me. And I remember even when he wasn't involved, I can remember ringing him up and just asking about certain forwards that he'd mark him and how I'd mark him and stuff like that. So I just found him very beneficial. And as I said, like, he's a great love for the game as well, like, and he's a very interesting character, like, when you speak to him. But
why did he leave in 2011?
That I don't know. I think that was between himself and the management team. I don't really know the ins and outs of it. As a player, I think you don't get involved in that, I suppose, from our side. Like, when you're playing, you just want to play, you go training, and all your focus is probably gearing all earned. And, you know, I suppose there's something between the management and the county board, I can answer that one.
Yeah, I guess so. And was it a situation that it was in the middle of the season and then he was there one night and not there for the next session?
Yeah. And it filters into play as well. I know that time myself, where he did a few sessions. I think we were training Clarny Leisure or something. And, you know, it's exactly what you said there, when you're getting used to someone being involved with you and helping you out, and then all of a sudden they're gone. Like, you know, it obviously has some effect. But, like, I think players now, there's so much involved in the game as well, that they move on, and, you know, you're judging your performance in games. So I've no doubt the lads will move on as well. Like, their concentration will be on the league this weekend, and not that a tithing gift to man and to Benji and the lads to kind of focus your mentality.
Yeah, like, I'm sure you'll be able to, you're very well placed to answer this question, because the fear from Kerry's perspective is that they lose everything that Donny Buckley has brought to them, but you suspect that actually the lessons learned over the last 18 months will be carried on over the next few months and hopefully years. From Peter Keane's perspective, was that the case for you, that the messages from Donny Buckley were still being heard loud and clear after he had left?
I suppose it's different. Like, I think Eamon came in that time with Jack, and you know, Eamon took over the reins of management as well, like, and he was excellent. He was probably one of the best man managers I've seen with players and stuff. And you know, I don't know what's going on, I don't know what's with the Kerry senior setup, but, like, they've a big backroom team now, and you've Peter, you know, he's been there with the minors, and Tommy Griffin, you've Warren Fitz, and you know, you've Jason McGahan, like, so you've one of the head strength conditioning coaches in the country, like, and they have a great setup there. And, like, I see even at the moment in the games, like, they have this kind of mentality. I know some people give you out, like, saying, oh, they only got over the line against Meath, or they only got over the line against Galway. But they're actually closing out games now, whether before, even over time, that they might be lost in this. So I just think they have a great setup there. Like, and look, as I said, Peter, you know, he's obviously a great manager because he's won 3 minor All-Irelands, and, you know, he's bringing that in, and he knows the players as well, Owen, like, so. I just think there'll be that trust in him as well, because the players have played under him with the minor, and they know, you know, they know his form and stuff.
Yeah, I think you're bang on the money there about Kerry being able to close out the game better in the league so far this year. It was clearly something that might have cost them in All-Ireland in the drawn game last year. You could see against Mayo last week that they were almost trying to keep possession when they didn't need to keep possession, trying to instill a possession game in the first half, which is what you want to see during the league. At the same time, though, only London and Leitrim have conceded more than them in the entire Allianz League so far this year. It sounds like you're willing to give them a free pass on that at the moment because they're trying out new things.
Well, I think the biggest thing, like, you'll probably be judged on is winning All-Ireland. I don't think nobody's going to be looking back in the league, even last year. You know, I suppose you talk about Kerry in the second game against Dublin. You know, that, or the, I suppose, Dublin in the first game, when obviously Cluxton pushed out and Tommy Walsh, and, you know, they had that bit between the teeth. They know how to win, like, Dublin. And I think for Kerry, I think they're trying out a lot of things in the league. Plus, I think, and it was there in my time as well, where people talk about, oh, geez, defensively. Like, I think the day of going man-for-man is gone because teams aren't playing the traditional 15-on-15. They're playing dropping players back, and they're coming in runs. And I think after the league, I think they'll know a lot about themselves. And I think come championship, which is the most important thing for Kerry, obviously, is that they'll be in a great position, because I know the backs have more on the legs, almost my own club. These guys, you know, they're unbelievable athletes, and they're fierce condition, and they're totally professional athletes now, Owen, compared to our time, where we'd winter off. These lads are training constantly, and, you know, like, so they're giving everything to the game. And I genuinely think, I just think I'm a small bit of a click away from winning All-Ireland. I just think, like, this year, I think it's very positive. As I said, like, they've brought that mentality. The Galway game in Tralee that night, you know, that was a game that could have slipped away from, but they stuck in there and they got through. It's the same with the Meath game, you know, like, and they haven't been back training that long either. So I think come championship, I think they'll know their six backs and their midfield, and you're bringing David Moran back into it, and the likes of Jack Sherwood and Peter Crowley hopefully will be back as well. So, no, they're 3 big players, and I just think that as a unit, they'll come championship, which is the most important time, they'll sit well.
Yeah, and second in the league at the moment. Even if you do judge it on league, it's clearly not all doom and gloom. Aidan, I want to get your take on the Dubs so far under Desi Farrell, especially what they're doing defensively, the edge that they're showing. Obviously, there was a fairly sizable brawl at that up in Healy Park and Oma. You can blame Tyrone for that, but I'm sure the Dubs had something to play for in that as well. They've had a few players sent off during this league.
Yeah.
They haven't lost anything under Desi Farrell, have they, in that regard?
No, and look, I've played with Tyrone myself. There was nothing too easy when we went up there. And, you know, I think the league has been fantastic so far. And, like, obviously, yeah, you don't want to see that in the game, but there's a massive bite in all the games we've seen so far this year. And, you know, people writing off Tyrone and Mickey Hart after two games, and all of a sudden they've turned over Kerry and Dublin above their own home patch. Like, and so I just think the Dubs, on the Desi Farrell, yeah, I think he's come in, and like you probably say early on, is there pressure? Obviously, there is as a manager come in, because they're at winning 5 in a row, and you know, I think Leicester players are in their prime at the moment, and they just haven't changed. I think they've an amazing mentality that I just think they love playing football. You know, they're good at what they do, the systems they play, they're bringing in new players. You know, even the league, they're already, they're unearthing 2 or 3 new players that are just kind of coming back into pan. And then you, I suppose what we never mentioned is like the likes of Bernard Brogan and Paul Flynn, these guys retiring, O'Gara, which were huge players for them, and all of a sudden they're being replaced by the new guys that are coming in, like, and they're going to be very, very hard to stop. Like as I said, they only came back in January training, and like they're up to the pace of the game already. And I think for Desi Farrell, he's probably learning as well, like, in that the way people with new manager coming in is that players that mightn't have been seen for the team or the panel before know that they have an opportunity to impress him then, and you know, he might go with something different. So it kind of freshens up the panel if it's going stale. But on the other side then, you're probably, as a player, if you started last, you're probably looking over your shoulder saying there's a new manager coming here.
Yeah.
You might have different ideas, so it kind of keeps them on their toes as well.
This idea of the Dublin defence evolving has been something that's been spoken about quite a bit over the last few years. You've got the likes of Philly McMahon, Johnny Cooper. They've clearly changed their game to some extent, I'd imagine, over the last few years. What have you noticed about them in terms of holding on to their positions?
Yeah, I think, look, every team needs a Johnny Cooper or a Philly McMahon or even a John Small, put them in that bracket where, you know, they're like enforcers of the team. And, you know, in any club or any county, you'll always talk about, you have a certain centre-back or a full-back that he's like an enforcer on the pitch, and they do all the kind of dirty work so that the other players can kind of shine around him. And that's what they are. They're great man-markers of the game. Like, you look at James McCarthy there, he's so versatile there. He's playing midfield, he's playing wing-back. You know, the All-Ireland that he's moved back into, even the full-back line. They remind me a lot, even our team in the noughties, where I remember even when Jack was training us, that one game you could be cornerback, next game you might be wing-back, centre-back, and you would detail to, I suppose, mark players, and that's what their team have. And, you know, I think they bring a great mentality. Well, like, I suppose a lot of people who spoke about Johnny Cooper last year, and he got sent off in the first game, and, you know, he came back in the second game, and that mindset of just, you know, I suppose, forgetting about that game, and, you know, he had an excellent game in the second match. And they have, I think that mentality, when you have a strong panel, that when there's players kind of vying for your jersey every week, or even if you're playing league games, you're kind of saying, geez, I need to play well in the league game here, because if I don't, this guy's going to come in, he's going to take my jersey. You know, that's amazing for a team, like, and the likes of Owen Murchison and these guys coming through. You know, they have, like, the conveyor belt of talent coming through for Dublin is constant. You can see that with their under-20s as well. Like, so I think it's just for other teams need to, I suppose, get a bit of luck. And I don't think they're invincible. Like, they're amazing what they've done, and that, I suppose, that thirst, their hunger they have for success every year is, I think, is kind of driving on the other team as well. And you have the Kerrys and the Tyrones, and I think Donegal as well are a team that are definitely coming down the line that are going to put up to the big teams. Like, so, you know, it'll have the makings of a great time to this show.
What is the best characteristic or the most important characteristic you need to find in that enforcer that you mentioned in defence? Is it having an edge? Is it being able to read the game? Is it something else?
I think it's a bit of everything, really. You know, like, I suppose, a lot of times you go to games, I know of my own career, that I'm not any of that beginner, you know, like, and you'd be kind of tussling away with the man, like, but yeah, they have. One of the enforcers is probably a big thing, but like they do a man-marking job on someone, like, and like I've seen that with Philly McMahon for years there. You know, he'd man-mark someone, next all of a sudden he goes up the field and kicks a pint, and it's inspirational. And they're, I suppose, they do things that the team see that maybe outside we wouldn't see, that, you know, even at training, like, this, that they're hammering into their man, like, I suppose, and they're getting the forwards kind of used to what's coming down the line for them as well, because if we look at Dublin forwards, they're marquee forwards, and every team is going to try to man-mark them or double-mark them when they come to the big games. And I suppose, like, when you're matching someone in nights out, like with Philly McMahon or John Small on your tail, and, you know, that can only improve you as a player. Like, and I just think they bring that mentality of, like, I even looked last year, I think the full-backs block on Stephen O'Brien there, was it the first game or the second game? Like, it was just, you know, it is a big bearing in the game, like, and they are just, as a unit, I just think they're physically very conditioned and they're very good footballers. But that's the other side of it. Like, they're very versatile in that they can play in a range of positions and, you know, that's very healthy signed in for a team.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned the focus that they would put on a marquee forward. It's something that obviously David Clifford would have experienced. He would have experienced quite a lot of close attention that opening night in Croke Park. Gave a lot back, I think most people from Kerry will admit. And then he experienced it again a couple of weeks later in Tyrone when he obviously got sent off and wasn't happy with the officials at all. What would your word of advice be to someone like David Clifford, who is going to consistently be targeted like that over the next few years of his career?
Yeah, I think, you know, David's a great guy. We're looking up for him at the college this year, down through IT here. And, like, he just loves the game. You know, we used to train in the morning times there. We used to do recovery sessions with him, and he'd be in training with us. And just a great guy. But I think he's just such a level-headed fella that he knows it's coming. You know, like, I suppose going into games, he's always going to be earmarked to be either the team's best man marker, or he's going to be double-marked. And, you know, people are going to be pulling and dragging out him, seeing if they can get a response. But I think, you know, I think it was a fortunate the day above him, Tyrone. But he was probably fortunate as well, one in that, I think referees and linesmen are going to be watching more for now and see if he's getting attention off the ball. Like, but, you know, David's well able, he's a big, if you've seen him in person, he's a big unit, so he's well able to mind himself. Like, and, you know, he's still only 20, 21 years of age, and, you know, he's playing, like, people spoke about getting the captaincy this year. You know, he's your ideal captain because he does his talking on the pitch. You know, like they were saying the last of me, I think he did quite game, and he still kicked 4 or 5 points. You know, he's just, I think we're a very lucky generation that we have someone like him and Sean O'Shea, and obviously a double player as well, and like Mike Murphy, that, you know, people, you see the games in Kerry at the moment, the league games in Clare and Tralee, you know, they're filling out the stadium to come watch this guy, right. You know, and so he's well able to mind himself, and I just think he lets his talk into the football the whole time.
American Football 101 on Off the Ball.
With the Aer Lingus College Football Classic.
Considered college football's most prized individual award, the Heisman Trophy was created in 1935 by the Downtown Athletic Club, and since then it has been awarded each year to the best player in college football. The trophy was named in honor of the club's athletic director, John Heisman, who died back in 1937. Some notable players who've won the award include Roger Staubach, Barry Sanders, Cam Newton, and most recently, LSU quarterback Joe Burrow.
American Football 101 on Off the Ball.
With the Aer Lingus College Football Classic.
Look.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
That's it for us this morning here on OTB AM. Stay tuned. Our Cheltenham preview show with thanks to Paddy Power is up next. If you're listening on OTB Sports Radio via the Go Loud app or indeed on offtheball.com/radio, then just stay with us. If you're on YouTube, brand new stream from Off the Ball will appear momentarily. Off the Ball back in your radios tonight from 7 o'clock. Reaction obviously to day one of the Festival of Champions League with Damien Delamey in studio. Go on off, subscribe now to the OTB AM podcast. Fully timestamped, makes it very easy to find exactly what you want this morning from our 2-hour show. The sports pages, John Duggan live from Cheltenham. Top 5 stories, football with Philippe Auclair and GAA with Aidan O'Mahony. If you missed anything, you have the OTB AM podcast, or of course you can catch our highlights on the YouTube channel where you can cast a show onto your smart TV. Stay tuned for our Paddy Power Cheltenham show live next.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.